Blog Talk Radio.
The scriptures clearly teach is that we, as believers, should know history. God tells us in passages like Romans 15:4 and Isaiah 43. He tells us also in 1 Corinthians 10 and Hebrews 11 and Psalm 73 and 78 and so many other places. He says to recall the former days, to remember the former times. Throughout the scriptures, we see that when a people remembers their history, they behave differently than when they forget their history. We see that even recovering histories, in the case of Josiah and the temple, leads to a national revival. Or in the case of Esther and Mordecai, the use of history by the king one night kept Mordecai from being hanged on the gallows and thus preserved the nation. So history is huge. God is into it. But in America, we don't do a good job of knowing our own history, and we need to. The scripture says that his people perish for lack of knowledge. We've been taught in America for years that what we're about is economics. We formed this nation because of taxation without representation. We need to know our history better. Taxation without representation does appear in the Declaration of Independence, but it's only one out of 27 issues that appear there. There's also religious issues. There's moral issues. There's so many other things than what we just hear today on economics. We need to go back and see that we were founded in this nation. Four clauses of the Declaration say that they didn't want activist judges. Two clauses say they wanted to end slavery. We have clauses over preserving the right to have Bible societies and other religious exercises. So as Christians, we need to know our history. We don't need to just go with what we've been taught. We ought to go back and read the documents. It's one thing to be taught what the Bible says. It's another thing to read it. So I challenge you. Follow up on what God says in the Scriptures. Know our history. Recall the former days. Let's go back and look at some of the patriots we had that were such strong Christians that are leaders that we don't even hear about today. So I challenge you, do some research, go to websites, look at things that will tell you about your faith history as a Christian. It's important you know that so that you know how to behave today.
Welcome, listeners, to City on a Hill. We're so grateful that you've tuned in. And as always, we ask that you invite your friends and family throughout the country to come join us, come and learn with us. Tell them to go to our website, www.cityonahill.tv, and share the podcast, and most especially today's broadcast. What we're going to be airing today is things that really all parents need to know. It is so important today to pay attention to what is going on in public education. And unfortunately, what's going on today in public education will also trickle on to homeschooling and private schooling. So everyone needs to be very concerned. We have to start off a video from the state of Georgia as to why they are getting out of what's called Common Core standards. Alabama is now under Common Core standards. It will not be fully implemented until 2014. But as Georgia, who was ahead of us in implementation, has found out, Common Core standards is rotten, and they are going to get out of Common Core standards. So here are the facts. But first of all, I'd like to remind everyone, folks, thank you for listening. This is really a great podcast. Please share it. We in Alabama are in the fight of our life. The bill, Senate Bill 190, needs to be gotten out of committee so that it can be voted in full by the Senate. That is our first step. And there is supposed to be, it's supposed to be on a committee meeting schedule. They put it off last Wednesday. So it's supposed to be on this Wednesday, the 13th. We're praying that those who hear this will take it to their legislators and say, we need to get Senate Bill 190 out of committee. Start here in Alabama. And if you're in another state, please get more of this information. Go to truthinamericaneducation.com. We've got all sorts of podcasts here. We have a Mr. Henry Burke who would be glad to find the cost for your state if you don't know it, want to be involved. We know that the Republican women have put that in their national resolution for the National Federation of Republican Women to get out of Common Core standards. Our LO is being here in Alabama, is the leader of that. So contact your Republican women's group because, you know, they are already behind this issue in your state. Get your state out of it. Get informed, share this podcast, download it, make CDs of it, and share it with your churches. You know, we're going to have also a flyer for you to share. So tell them to go to www.cityonahill.tv, and it'll be on the front of the website. Steps you can take to inform that, you know, really there is nothing new under the sun. And it has been learned in the past and used in the past. What is taught to the children will affect a nation. So keep that in mind. But here to start is the Press Camp Conference. Let me know if you can hear this, Ms. Barbara.
I want to thank...
I hear something.
Senator 167. And I want to thank Senator Barry Loudermilk, one of our co-sponsors of the bill, for being with us today. As most of you know, it's taken a lot of work by many people, including some of you standing in this room, to get to the point where we're ready to present this bill to the Education Committee. To give our reasons why the state of Georgia should do everything in its power to release itself from the commitment of the Common Core and the PARC, which is the Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers. And the reason that I'm convinced that we must do this is because of what I'm hearing from you, our parents, our teachers, school superintendents, from experts in the field of education who clearly know what they're talking about and understand the faults and the dangers of this program. Now, I'm sure that the previous administration had the best of intentions when it applied for the Race to the Top grant, but the lack of the accountability to parents and taxpayers and teachers in this state has simply been stunning. First of all, there's been no thorough cost analysis of what this is going to cost the state from these unfunded mandates. No one has ever answered the long-term cost of implementing the Common Core. We're just now finding out that the cost to implement the PARC will cost the state an additional $30 million a year. That was never vetted and discussed or disclosed when we went into this program. Secondly, allowing a consortium of states to work with nonprofits and other unaccountable parties to develop our standards without open public oversight is simply untenable in a free country, especially considering that Georgia taxpayers support K-12 education with $13 billion of hard-earned money every year. Georgia needs a transparent, democratic process, a developing curriculum standards, and a means to ensure more direct accountability at the local level, not groups in Washington, D.C. We will be presenting this afternoon some testimony of some very important people, and I'd like to take a moment and introduce them to you, and I'll invite them to, once I finish introducing them, to say a few words to you, and then we'll open it up with questions. First, our first speaker will be Ms. Jane Robbins. She's a citizen of Georgia, a Harvard-trained attorney, and a senior fellow with the Americans Principles Project. Many of you probably recognize Jane as the face on the video, Stop the National Core Power Grab, Reclaim Local Control of Education. And here's Dr. Sandra Stotsky. She is most likely the nation's leading expert on the English language arts standards. She served as a member of the Common Core Validation Committee, but refused to sign the standards. She has served as a senior associate commissioner in the Massachusetts Department of Education and is the recently retired professor of education reform, 21st century chair in teacher quality at the University of Arkansas. Then we have Mr. Zev Werman. He's a visiting scholar at the Hoover Institution and former senior advisor at the Office of Planning, Evaluation, and Policy Development in the U.S. Department of Education. Throughout the development of the Common Core standards in 2009 and 2010, he analyzed the mathematical drafts for the state of California. I believe you'll find his comments very interesting. Then we have Dr. Jim Arnold. He's a seasoned educator who's been a teacher, an assistant principal, a principal, and now serves as a superintendent of the Pelham City Schools here in Georgia. Then Ms. Tish Strange. who's an accountant and comes from a family of educators and married into a family of educators. She studied accounting at Kennesaw State University, graduated in 2001 with a bachelor's in business administration. Today, she'll be conveying the concerns of many parents whom I've heard from about the unfortunate consequences of this program. And finally, we'll have Ms. Judy Kraft, who's of Norcross, who's a former field director for the Georgia Christian Alliance and current co-chair of the Civic and Moral Concerns Ministry at First Redeemer Church in Cumming. She's a grandmother, citizen, and former reading specialist. She earned her master's in reading at Georgia State University and worked as a reading specialist for elementary grade students in DeKalb County. Why don't we open it up and ask each of you to make a statement, and then we'll open it up for some questions.
Robbins, in 2010, some officials in the state committed Georgia to a radical restructuring of education in this country, which involves setting standards, drafting standards by experts in Washington, and then having the federal government enforce those standards on the state. That's what happened. It was done without notifying, much less consulting, parents or teachers or taxpayers or the legislature. And so until recently, most legislators didn't even know this had happened. Well, it has happened, but now we're starting to figure out what has happened. Now the word is getting out, and people are starting to unwrap this and see exactly what happened. And what we realize is that it is a complete perversion of our Constitution. The Constitution leaves education in the hands of the state. We are backing Senator Ligon's bill because that would restore the constitutional balance. This was a deficient process that resulted in mediocre standards. We can do better than this. We don't have to settle for Common Core, and we don't have to settle for letting somebody else make our decisions for me.
But I'd like to pick up on the point that Jane Robbins just made about the process. I was not only in the Department of Education in Massachusetts in charge of developing all of our K-12 standards, so I know about the civic process, the procedures to use for the development of standards at the state level, but I have also been very active in my own home community all my life, League of Women Voters, elected library trustee, and a town meeting member, two elected offices in my home community, and know all about such things as minutes of meetings, summaries, motions, and how to make sure that one lets the public know what is going on. And I was on Common Core's validation committee, and no matter what I tried to do to find out what was happening behind the scenes, what they were doing with the critiques that I was sending them regularly of the English Language Arts standards, my specialty, I never got any answers back. Unfortunately, the Gates Foundation had chosen the people it wanted to be on the Standards Writing Committee, and they were not looking as if they were going to be responsive to any criticisms coming from even the Validation Committee, which had been charged with creating critiques and interacting with the particular people who were writing standards. So this was a very much behind-the-scenes operation with unresponsive people and no opportunity to even find out what the critiques were that this committee had, because we couldn't get a hold of those either. So I was then one of the five people on this validation committee who refused to sign off because I didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. And it was unacceptable from a civic point of view as well as from the actual product.
And I reviewed the standards intensively over a long period of time. I find them mediocre, not awful, not great, mediocre, much below what international competitors do. Worse, large chunks of these mass standards are experimental without any evidence of success. So we have rather detailed standard imposed on the whole country without experimentation, without evidence of success, but they are claimed to be career and college ready. The truth is we don't even know if there is such a test that can do both career and college ready. The National Assessment Governing Board, the people in charge of the NAEP standard, actually had a technical committee investigate this question, if there is such a test that can be both career and college ready, just 2-3 years ago, no more, 4 or 5 by now. The answer came back, no, we don't know. We have to investigate it and research it. Yet they were declared career and college ready. I also look at the cost of the testing. And if you choose to do a paper and pencil route, it will cost you about 5 times what you pay today. If you decide to go for the way that a new assessment is supposed to be administered, computer-based, it will cost you about 10 times what you pay today. So instead of about $8 per person, you will pay about $80 per person. I wish you good luck.
We are extremely concerned about this. Now, I will tell you that my statements and my position is not an official position of the Board of Education, but we have discussed this at great length. In Pelham, if we were to test all our students based on the figures that I've seen with the PARC testing coming in 2014-15, we're looking at a little over $45,000 per year. That's a teacher for us. And I don't see a pot of money from the legislature coming to pay for this testing. The governor said in a meeting with the senator a couple of weeks ago, there will be no money forthcoming to pay for this testing. I don't see any DOE money available for this. So where's the other pot? Local is what I'm thinking. We don't have it. We just don't have it. And I'll be quite honest with you, I'm also concerned about the lack of an appeals process for revisions to Common Core. There is none. Right now, if we want to appeal something in Pelham, we can talk to our local board. We can talk to the Georgia Department of Education. But who are we going to talk to if we want to appeal a standard with Common Core? Call the National Governors Association? I don't see it happening.
Strange, and I'm here representing parents. I'm a frustrated parent going through this Common Core standards and on a daily basis working with homework that I should be able to help my daughter with. I've been an accountant for 12 years. I shouldn't have problem multiplying fractions. But I do because of these Common Cores. I'm frustrated with it. I sent the senator an email just thanking him for introducing the bill, and here I am.
I've been studying this for about the last 9 months, and I found that a program that promises rigor is exactly the opposite. For example, the 20 most recommended reading books in the high school now are written at 7th grade reading level or less. And in math, right now our children are having algebra in the 8th grade. That will be moved to 9th grade, which means that those who are mathematically gifted will not be able to take pre-calculus and calculus and prepare themselves for college. So I think that this is something that we really need to let parents know. Thank you.
Well, folks, that was a press conference, and you can find that on YouTube and share it. And this today will be on our podcast, and you can share all these testimonies. And what I'm fixing to play now is a testimony from a former superintendent of education for the state of Texas and why he could not sign his state to Common Core. He said it is unconstitutional. So here we go with Robert Scott's testimony.
I enjoyed life on parole and on the outside out since July. I have been involved in education policy for well over 20 years. I've been involved in education reform efforts and curriculum revisions in Texas and nationally. And my experience with the Common Core actually started when I was asked to sign off to them before they were written. And so I was saying, before I needed to sign a letter, I wrote to Common Core. I asked if I might read them first, and that was just, I think, appropriate. And I was told they hadn't been written, but I did still want my signature on the letter. And I said, that's absurd. First of all, I don't have the legal authority to do that because our law requires Article 9 of the State Board of Education to adopt curriculum standards with the direct input of Texas teachers, parents, and business. So adopting something that was written behind closed doors in another state would not meet my federal or my state law. So I said, hey, let me take a wait-and-see approach. And I called with the Governor's Common Core. When they wrote their standards, I'd be happy to take a look at them. And if something remarkable was in there that I found that we did not have an honest, I would work with our board to try to incorporate it into our state's curriculum standards, which I thought was, a common sense and fair thing to do. And then I was told, oh, no, a state that adopts Common Core must adopt in its totality the Common Core and can only add 15%. It was then that I realized that this initiative, which had been constantly portrayed as state-led and voluntary, was really about control. It was about control, and it got co-opted by the U.S. Department of Education later. And it was about control from some education reform groups who candidly admit their real goal here is to create a national marketplace for education products and services. So even more troubling to me was that the lack of transparency. So these standards were written behind closed doors, not subject to open records, not subject to open meetings. We didn't know who the writers were until the product was complete, and we don't know in the future who is going to rewrite these standards or when. And product that say, yeah, we know the process was deeply flawed, and we're sorry about that, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater because it really is a good system. And to use a legal analogy as an attorney, you know, it's the fruit of the poisonous tree. You know, once the tree is poisoned, the fruit that comes from it is also poisoned in many people's minds, and I think we have to take a serious look at that when we said no. So education policy in the U.S. mainly been left to the states, because the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965 was the first real foray in major federal involvement for economic expansions. And after that, several iterations of that bill have been passed, as well as the creation of the U.S. Department of Education. Three major laws still on the books today at the federal level: the act that created the department, the General Education Provisions Act, and No Child Left Behind, all explicitly prohibit the United States Department of Education becoming involved in state and local curriculum systems. Those three laws are still in the books today. So, in an effort to sidestep those laws, it appears the department just started paying people to do things that it was prohibited to do. So what they did was, while there's another federal law that says that you cannot create a national test, what they did was say, we're not going to create a national test, we're going to provide a grant to create two national tests. And there are two consortia that were created by a grant of the stimulus bill, and you guys belong to one of them, and there's another one out there as well. And so rather than the department saying we're creating a national test, they said, no, these consortia are creating this national test. So, and additionally, after that, when we said no, the department, at my understanding, had a meeting, and they said, how do we get Texas in? And they said, we'll create this program called Race at the Top, and we'll tie the funding to adoption of these Common Core college rating standards. There's no way in the world Texas could say no to that. So I looked at the grant application, and I looked at the amount of money, $700 million from the state of Texas. And I met with Governor Perry, and I said, it's a lot of money, $700 million. I said, but you have to divide it by 4 years, because it's a four-year grant. I said, and our budget in the state of Texas is $50 billion a year. We have 5 million children. So $700 million is enough to run our schools for 2 days. So we would get 2 days' worth of funding over 4 years, and the federal government would, you know, purportedly get control of our curriculum standards, our teacher evaluation system, a new data system they were asking us to develop in perpetuity. Governor Perry now looked at that and said, it's probably not a wise investment for us. And we were respectful and said, no thanks. It's voluntary and state-led. We chose not to do it. So after we said that, the department said, okay, fine. You know, you states that are not reformers in our mind, we'll go to Congress and we'll get money for a district competition, and we'll go around you to your school districts and get them to adopt our reforms in exchange for these grants. So that subsequently they had to race to the top district competition. They had, out of 1,036 school districts in Texas, plus another 400-plus charters, I think they had 68 applicants, and ultimately they funded two charter schools. So I think many of the districts in the state of Texas saw the same issues that I saw, and that is federal oversight over teacher evaluations, over curriculum decisions, over data in exchange for what in the long term is not a substantial amount of money in the district the size of Texas. I do know that the department then said, if you want a waiver for No Child Left Behind, you have to do this. And we said respectfully, no, we're not going to do that. Other states have applied for and received the waivers. One state in particular, California, tried to apply for a general waiver, saying, we don't want to do these reforms, but yes, we'd like relief from No Child Left Behind. The department just recently denied that waiver request. So it's very clear to me that the department is hinging a lot of its decisions, both financially and in terms of waivers, on adoption of a curriculum matrix and framework that they really have no legal authority to be involved in. You know, the proponents of the Common Core talk about the need for common standards among the states to make valid comparisons, and I would simply say there are other ways to do that. We have the National Assessment of Education Progress, the NAEP, that is the country's blue ribbon report card, that we can continue, because I absolutely want to be able to compare kids in Texas to how they're performing in Massachusetts, in Georgia, in Oklahoma, and Pennsylvania. So I don't doubt that goal. Don't doubt it one bit. And I think there are other ways to do it.
There's also the possibility of creating a national test item bank where we can voluntarily share test items and reduce the cost and reduce the intrusion of the federal government into the system. When I looked at this from the state of Texas, if I had simply scrapped everything that we had done over the last 4 years in developing our college and career readiness standards and gone to the Common Core, I would have had to send my legislature a bill for $2.5 to $3 billion. So I would have gotten $700 million and I'd have had to send them a bill for $2.5 to $3 billion. I can't even imagine coming to you all as a legislature and saying, I got $700 million for my agency and I get to spend it in a way that I see fit according to the oversight of the Department of Education, but in return I get to send you a fiscal note for $2.5 to $3 billion. I know my legislature back home probably wouldn't have appreciated it too much. So it didn't seem like the thing to do. The loss of control was over curriculum was troubling to me, but let me talk to you as a practical aspect of administering a system the size of Texas. When I set our testing calendar every year, I had to be respectful of what was going on in local communities. Multiple spring breaks, Easter, Texas Public School Week, when we support, when we accelerate our public schools. And people in New York City and D.C. laugh at me when I say this, but Houston last stop Sherman Rodeo, San Antonio last stop Sherman Rodeo, community fairs, county fairs. I had to be cognizant of what was going on in communities because I didn't want to upset local traditions. I don't know how a federal test can recognize all of those local communities' celebrations and traditions in 46 states. And I don't think that they're trying to be sinister in their attempt. I just don't know how they possibly can do it and accommodate all of those local community traditions. You know, further ruining local control is the oversight over teacher evaluations. And this is very important because I have been a proponent of using standardized testing for portions of teacher evaluations, but I also know the limitations of this. And I'll give you an example. I overruled, as the judge, the termination of a teacher that was purportedly based on student performance on one of these evaluation systems because, as I read the record, I concluded that the student discipline on the campus was so poorly enforced, no teacher could have been effective in that environment. And so I think you have to look at a lot of things. The way the students come to school, their background, the ability of the teacher to manage and the efforts on the campus to maintain discipline, all of those things go into factors that should be considered in a proper evaluation system because there are also studies that show you can look at a very highly effective and high-growth teacher and one that showed negative growth. And if you switch their classrooms, the one that was negative becomes positive and the one positive becomes negative. So I think you've got to be careful and look at the whole mix of things when you do this evaluation system. And I worry that the dialogue that should be happening at the local level between teachers and principals and parents about these evaluation systems is being lost in the demands of the department in terms of its timetable and its expectations. And I know states are being threatened for the loss of their race to top money if they don't meet specific criteria and specific deadlines. So I think you lose a lot of discussions that need to happen with respect to these high-stakes decisions regarding teacher evaluations. Now, I'll be brief. I know we're kind of a time constraint, but I'll close by saying, you know, I think the national emphasis on curriculum standards is based on the idea that uniformity leads to better student performance. But I would point out to you, and this is extremely important, these curriculum standards have never been piloted anywhere. We don't know that they lead to greater student performance. And traditionally, when I'm going to do something that impacts 5 million students, I first want to pilot it and look and see what it does in 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 campuses or districts. That was not done here. Now, I want to leave you with a quote that's one of my favorites that I use to describe what I see happening here. Not in this particular branch of government, but it still holds true. If Congress can apply money indefinitely to the general welfare, and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. They may establish teachers in every state, county, and parish, and pay them out of the public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the union. They may undertake the regulation of roads other than post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress. Now, in this case, we're talking about the executive branch. But that quote was originally spoken by James Madison on the floor of the United States House of Representatives in 1792. The framers of our union saw this coming. and they intended deliberate dialogue before one branch of government acted on its own, and they intended the checks and balances to prevent one branch from dominating. And I see that happening here, and I just leave you with that sentiment to think about as we move forward. And again, thank you for your time, and I have time to answer some questions before I sprint to the airport.
That was Robert Scott, former Texas Commissioner of Education's testimony. Now we're going to air for you the Jane Robbins. She's the one that spoke earlier when the state of Georgia is withdrawing from Common Core in that press conference. So we're going to go now to Jane Robbins. And she is also on YouTube and can be found on the Stop the Common Core video.
Education is quickly changing in the United States. It's hard for parents to keep up with what their children are learning in school, and it's even harder to understand the national trends in education and where they're taking our children and our country. I hope that today is the day that we will resolve to take ownership over the education of our children. So let's start by trying to understand what's happening in our public schools. Hello, my name is Jane Robbins, and I'm with the American Principles Project. I have a disturbing story to tell, a story about the Common Core state standards, how they were foisted on the states by the federal government and by well-funded private interests in Washington. We need to realize that the Common Core will strip our states of their constitutional authority over education. Parents will no longer be able to control or even influence what their children are taught. The Common Core scheme will ultimately empower the federal government to control school curricula in violation of three federal statutes. Parents need to know how Common Core standards will ultimately narrow the curriculum and prepare our children to be cogs in a national industrial system rather than full citizens in a free republic. Taxpayers need to know how the Common Core leads to national testing that will impose substantial costs on state and local school budgets. Parents need to know how the massive student data tracking system will contribute to the loss of student and family privacy. Citizens need to understand how this new educational direction will gradually guide the next generation away from our free enterprise system and into a managed economy. All this is supposedly the price we have to pay to ensure that our children are better prepared to compete in the global economy. Join me as I explain what is a very real threat to the United States education system.
Jane, I don't know too much about the Common Core. Could you just start by defining what we are talking about exactly?
The Common Core State Standards Initiative is currently a set of national common K-12 content standards in English, language arts, and math, ideally to be adopted in all 50 states so that education will be standardized throughout the country. The supposed purpose of the Common Core is to impose rigorous standards so that our students will be better prepared for competing in the economy and to allow comparison of student performance. Common Core standards have currently been adopted by 45 states and the District of Columbia.
So what's the problem with nationally standardized content standards? I heard that the states work together to create these standards.
Common Core proponents claim that Common Core was led by the states, but this simply isn't true. The real drivers of the Common Core were the same advocates of the national school curriculum who have been around for years in various guises. They tried and failed to impose a national curriculum in the past. For example, with the national history standards in the 1990s, which were so politically correct and anti-American that they were rejected by the U.S. Senate 99-1. The national curriculum advocates learned three things from past failures. First, don't call the curriculum standards national or federal. Second, impose them quickly and quietly before the people and the representatives find out about it. And three, don't start with a controversial subject such as history. Start instead with math and English.
Can you identify a few of these groups of people and why they seem so motivated to take over the curriculum standards in all 50 states?
This most recent effort of progressive education reformers is primarily connected with a nonprofit group in Washington, D.C. called Achieve, Inc., which wrote the national standards, with lavish funding from private foundations, especially the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They realized the need to make this look like a state-generated initiative, so they went to the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers, both of which are D.C.-based trade associations, and neither of which had a grant of legislative authority from states to write national school standards. But because the Common Core standards were created under their auspices, the proponents now claim that the effort was state-led. The real power here is the Gates Foundation, which has spent over $100 million helping create and propagate the standards and has plans to spend many millions more. But over the long haul, with all the technology and new curriculum that this new educational paradigm requires, companies such as Microsoft will more than recover the money they have invested. There is a great deal of money to be made at the educational trough.
I'm trying to understand how these private groups could have so much influence over 50 states. Is the federal government involved in this?
Secretary of Education Arne Duncan is a huge proponent of Common Core, and under his direction, the Federal Department of Education has used its power of the purse to essentially bribe states to adopt the standards. In the spring of 2009, the infamous stimulus bill gave the Department of Education a $4.35 billion earmark, money to use however the department wanted. The department created the Race to the Top competition, whereby the federal government took our money and gave us the chance to compete to get some of it back. States could apply for Race to the Top grants, but to have a realistic shot at getting the money, they had to agree to adopt the Common Core standards and the national tests, the assessments, aligned with the Common Core, all sight unseen, because at that time the standards had not even been completed, and the testing component is still not complete. The Race to the Top application came out in November 2009, and completed applications were due only 2 months later. Now remember, at that time, the country was in a deep recession, and states were desperate for money. It's also important to note that between the months of November and early January, most state legislatures are not in session. So desperate state officials had to decide without consulting their legislatures whether to commit to the Common Core and all it entails in order to get Race to the Top money. In Georgia, the decision to apply for Race to the Top money was made by Governor Sonny Perdue and State School Superintendent Kathy Cox. Yet Kathy Cox, of all people, should know that content standards that cannot be changed by the states cannot work in the long run. In 2004, then-Superintendent Cox canceled plans to use reading and writing standards developed for K-3 grades by the National Center on Education and the Economy. Why? Because that organization would not agree to let the state change its standards in any way. Cox stated that the state of Georgia, quote, had some real trouble going forward with a document we weren't going to be able to change, close quote. The state board threw out a $125,000 contract and brought together a group of Georgia teachers to come up with new standards. And here we go again, getting into the same mess, yet deeper this time around. The Common Core standards were finally released in June 2010, and states were given 2 summer vacation months to get their state school boards to sign off on the Common Core commitment, again, with no involvement by the legislature. In Georgia, the state school board signed off on the Common Core in just 1 month. The other way the federal government is promoting Common Core is through No Child Left Behind waivers. The U.S. Department of Education is encouraging states to adopt Common Core in order to qualify for a waiver from the most demanding provisions of No Child Left Behind. Georgia received both Race to the Top funding and a No Child Left Behind waiver, so it is firmly shackled to the Common Core and the aligned national tests unless the legislature does something to change it.
It's obvious that these federal grants usurp legislative authority and make state control irrelevant. What about the national testing? What are the concerns associated with the testing aspect of the Common Core?
2 consortia of states have hired so-called testing experts to create national tests aligned with Common Core. One is called the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, and the other is the Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers, better known as PARC, P-A-R-C-C. These will all be computerized tests, so school districts will have to acquire and maintain the technology necessary for testing all students in most grades multiple times per year. Georgia is a member of PARC, which means we've agreed to implement the PARC national test by the school year 2014-15.
Who's paying to develop these tests?
The U.S. Department of Education gave the two consortia $360 million for test creation. And once that money runs out, the states that are members of the consortia will have to assume the cost. These types of computer-driven tests are far more expensive than traditional testing, and there has not been a candid discussion on the ongoing cost this creates for taxpayers. Something to consider about the people developing these PARC and Smarter Balance tests. The PARC tests are being designed by the same group of progressive reformers that gave us the Common Core standards. With respect to Smarter Balanced, the most influential person there is a radical Stanford professor named Linda Darling Hammond, who has partnered with Bill Ayers, yes, that Bill Ayers, in the past on some of his education projects, and who is basically opposed to testing students at all. Under her direction, the Smarter Balanced test will probably lower the bar on student academic expectations and instead focus on subjective performance-based outcomes. So we ought to question whether these tests are even going to test the type of academic knowledge that students ought to have.
Bruce, I hope that really gives you lots of food for thought. There's really more videos out there of Jane Robbins. We will try to air them in the future so that you can hear them. But you can also Google that, Stop the Common Core videos by Jane Robbins. So that is incredible. But in the meantime, we are going to take a moment break, and we are going to go and play for you something about the two philosophies of education. It is very important that you get to know what they are. Hope you, the listeners, will be in prayer, and we'll send this podcast to your friends and family, to your churches. Please go to www.cityonahill.com. TV, and on the front of our website will be a link to this audio program that you're hearing, and also there will be a link to a printer-friendly version of a brochure flyer that you can give to your church, pass out to your Bible study, pass out to congregations, and also there will be a link on what churches can and cannot do so that you'll understand that it's all right for you to pass out. And I really think that God wants us to pass it out because, unfortunately, there's danger here with the tie of Linda Darling Hammond being the author of the C-Scope, the Burqa incident, the Allah's God curriculum you've heard in the news. She's the author of that, and she is also the writer of the specifications for the Common Core standards. So this is very dangerous, and Jesus warned us, you know, it's better to hang a millstone around your neck than to lead these little ones into sin. And I feel like, I hate to say it, that's what this Common Core standards will be forcing teachers to do. And we will be part of that if we allow it to happen. So please listen, become informed, and share it. Let's all be in prayer and make a difference. Here now is Ms. Donna Garner from Texas, a premier expert on education.
But let me go on and explain to you about the two types of education. This is a little bit lengthy, but I want everybody to think as I read it and to realize that this is happening, and this is right under our noses. And once we see it, then all we have to do is say, oh, this is type one, or, oh, this is type two. And they're very different. They do not diverge. They are separate. Now, this is type number one. Education, which is knowledge-based, academic. The standards are clearly worded. The goals are very definite. You have grade-level specific content that's supposed to be achieved at each grade level. The students are tested on those things they're supposed to learn at each grade level. And most of the test questions are objectively scored. That means with right or wrong answers. These standards that are built on type 1 are normally built from K and then go right on up to grade 12. And type 1 believes that students are best served, best taught, best They learn best if they're taught mostly, not all the way, but mostly through direct, systematic instruction. That's with the teacher, right there with the students, facing the students, working interactively with them, you know, in exchanging information with them. They're talking back and to each other. It's a live presentation. And in Texas, we actually adopted standards that are type one. And we used this philosophy. We did this starting in May 2008. So our standards for English, science, social studies, and math are type one, okay? And we refer to these in some, you know, in some of us call them traditional method. But that doesn't mean that you can't use some new and different tactics and strategies to present it. But the type one means that we still teach the basic things. We teach phonics and grammar. We teach correct grammar. We teach a correct spelling. We teach correct the way to write cursively correctly. We basically emphasize classical literature. We teach expository writing. That means expository means where you expose facts. So it's fact-based writing. We also teach persuasive writing, which is where you take facts and try to persuade the reader to believe a certain thesis or certain proposition that you're presenting there in your paper. And we teach research writing. And these are all being, this is all part of our new standards in Texas because we have all of that built into our type one standards. In math, the emphasis is on students knowing the math functions, four functions anyway, and we teach those automaticity. The student, all multiplication facts, they need to know their multiplication facts, and all of those, you know, they memorize them basically where they can pull that information up quickly. We also have definite discrete courses called Algebra 1, Algebra 2, Geometry, Calculus, U.S. History, World History, Botany, and so on and so on. They're definite separate courses. They're not mushed together. And we're going to talk about how that mushing has occurred in the Common Core standards. But ours are separate. Now, that's type 1. And I think Alabama has a lot of that in your standards that you've been using for years. I understand that your English standards are fairly good there in Alabama. I don't know that much about them, but I hope that they are type 1. Type 2, though, is what's in the Common Core standards. Let me digress just a moment to make sure that our viewers and our listeners understand what Common Core standards are. Common Core Standards, we call them the CCS, just for short, Common Core Standards, was a plan that was contrived by the Obama administration, but they really went back and took a lot of what had already been established by Hillary Clinton and a group called the National Committee on Education and the Workforce, Education and the Economy, NCEE, and the person in charge of that was Mark Tucker. And then you had Governor Cuomo, an IRA magaziner. You had such people as Robert Reich and, of course, Hillary Clinton. All these people back in the early 80s came up with this their plan, which morphed then whenever Obama came into office. It morphed into an even more what's called progressive or further extension of Type 2 so that now it involves the teaching and indoctrinating into the social justice agenda. And the Common Core standards then, which came as soon as Obama came into office, he started pushing, at the same time he started pushing Obamacare, he was also pushing the Common Core standards. Unfortunately, our country was so caught up in Obamacare that they really couldn't handle two issues at once. And so the Common Core standards just kind of came into our country without anybody noticing. They were just being pushed right straight on through. And, of course, the Obama administration used the carrot and stick trick, where they offered money, raised to the top money, if states would align themselves with the Common Core Standards Initiative. And once they aligned themselves, then they would write up their application their RTTT, which is the Race to the Top application, and then they would submit it. And I think that Alabama did that, if I'm not mistaken. Diana, is that right?
Yes, we applied for it and got nothing.
Right. But the catch is, and this is what we have to remember, that states who applied for it, to even apply for the RTTT funding, whether they got it or not, they had to move their education system and put it in alignment with what the Obama administration told them to do. So even though Alabama didn't get any money, you all still committed yourselves to the Common Core standards. You also committed yourselves to give the tests, the national assessments, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute because I know y'all have just withdrawn, but I'm talking about what you did initially. When you applied for RTTT funds, you said you wanted to become a part of the Common Core standards. You wanted to become a part of the national curriculum, because if you have national standards, obviously you're going to have national curriculum. You also said you would give the national assessments. You said that you would then base teachers' evaluations on how their students did on the national assessments, which, of course, is an attempt to force teachers to teach what's in the national standards. And then when teachers know, in other words, that their salaries and their evaluations are going to be based upon how their students do on the national assessments, then, of course, that's all they teach is what's in the national standards. So you have the federal government telling local schools what to teach. And then, of course, the last thing is they set up this huge national database with very personally intrusive information in it on your children, every child, every teacher, homes, all kinds of personal information is going to be kept in that national database. So whenever Alabama and other states went ahead and applied for the RTT, then whether you receive the money or not, you were still following the Type 2 philosophy of education. Let me explain what this is. This is where you believe in project-based, subjective curriculum. And when it's subjective, that means that you're emphasizing students' beliefs and opinions and emotions. There aren't any right or wrong answers. It's how well the student, talk about his opinions and his emotions. Everything is subjective. Well, when it's subjectively assessed, of course, that's built upon, the score is based upon the value of whoever's evaluating it, you know, whatever their value system is. You know, if their value system is that they're a type 2, and you have a student who's a type 1 kid who believes that there are right and wrong answers in life, then obviously that child's going to be at a huge disadvantage. Type 2 also emphasizes multiculturalism. We all know what that is. And political correctness. And, of course, environmental extremism, such as global climate change, diversity, lots of emphasis on diversity, and, of course, the social justice agenda, which involves the LGBT, which is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and the bullying, that whole thing goes together. They're trying to say that, you know, they try to emphasize the fact that if you have a different type of gender identity, then if anybody brings that up or should mention in their health class, for instance, that that's an unhealthy lifestyle to have homosexual relations, then that's considered to be incorrect, you know, multiculturally, politically incorrect. And, of course, that goes against, that's a type of bullying in the minds of the Obama administration. I guess you know and your listeners know that in Massachusetts, along with 12 other states, they have just said, they have ruled that, and that this will be going into effect as we speak in these 12 states, including Massachusetts, that transgendered students will get to choose which restroom they want to go to. If they feel that they are more masculine than feminine, they, of course, would go to the men's restrooms. And they would also go into, they would also be on the teams then that are commensurate with their gender identity. In other words, they would go to the dressing rooms and be involved in the athletic teams that they feel, in which they feel they would fit. And so this is being done now. This is an outgrowth of the social justice agenda, which has been pushed heavily by Arne Duncan, who's the Secretary of Education under Obama, and, of course, the Obama administration itself. The standards that are tied to are built backwards. They're built from grade 12 on down to K, which is the very opposite way that you would build a house or the way, you know, we all learn from the part to the whole. That's the way little babies are made. And these type 2 standards are built exactly the opposite direction. So we see type 2 reflected in the Common Core standards that emphasize subjectivity, feelings, emotions, beliefs, multiculturalism, political correctness, social engineering, globalism, evolution, sexual freedom, meaning with contraceptives instead of abstinence. Victimization, of course, is also a part of that. Everybody's a victim, and the more that you can describe yourself as a victim, then more people feel sorry for you, and they, you know, want to take your side. And of course, there's not just the acceptance, but not just tolerance, but the acceptance, in other words, of the LGBT lifestyle. This type too also involves redistribution of wealth and a tremendous de-emphasis on fact-based knowledge, on the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Founding Fathers, and American exceptionalism. And these last things just are breaking my heart, as I know they are you, Diana and Barbara, as you see our nation, our president, making America the laughingstock of the world and making America look as if we're the tyrants and taking everything we have and trying to send it to other countries. We know that that's the intent, of course, of the Global Climate Change Initiative. That whole agenda is to make us feel guilty for our carbon dioxide emissions, which, of course, is a natural thing, and our world would not even be able to function. Our grass and trees would not even grow without carbon dioxide emissions. But anyway, they've tried to make us in America feel guilty that we're poisoning the whole world, so therefore we have to take our money and send it to Africa and other countries. So anyway, those are the two philosophies of education. Barbara and Diana, would you like to comment on those two? I know that you're thinking and I know you have some things you want to add to that.
Well, I have a lot of questions, but I'm going to let Ms. Barbara have a chance first to comment. Ms. Barbara?
Well, I've never heard it put better and explained so clearly. And I was going to add something I've written down, but you covered it. So the only thing I would add, I guess, would be that although the race to the top money, some was given, very few states were able to get it, and yet so many of the states committed, as you said, everything,
yes,
to do everything,
yes,
according to the Obama administration. So, you know.
Yes. And I will hand it to Alabama, but let's talk about Alabama for a minute, because I understand that you all decided that you were not going to participate in the national assessments. So, Diana, do you want to speak about that a little bit? Because that's great. I'm so proud of y'all. Goodness, that took a lot of courage.
Well, that had to be Ms. Betty Peters and Stephanie Bell, you know, right there at the forefront, Ms. Garner. You know, they've always stood by the fact that we don't need to be in Common Core. And while they're there, they're just giving so much good information that you really can't go against, because what they speak of is the truth. And I'm just really thankful to Ms. Betty Peters and Ms. Stephanie Bell, because it couldn't have happened without those two speaking out. There's no way. And so we're just really grateful for that.
Well, Diana, your program's done a lot to help that also. And I know Betty and Stephanie are so grateful for your coming along and supporting them, and Barbara and Eugenia. A lot of you folks have worked so much to alert your people, your state and around the other states around you, to the devastating effect of the Common Core standards. And I hope now that you all can not only pull out of the national assessments, but you can also pull away from the national standards, the Common Core standards themselves. One thing that everybody does need to understand, and I can give the credit to Henry W. Burke, who sent this to me, and he researched the different states to find out how much money the local taxpayers, the state taxpayers, were going to have to put up to implement the national standards, the national assessments. Because what the deal is this, the Obama administration came along and handed people just a pittance. Some of these very few states got any money whatsoever from RTTT, but the states themselves had to commit for the Common Core standards, and that means the Common Core assessments. And I hope people understand that Alabama, if you all were to have continued with the national assessments, which you wisely chose not to do just, what was it, several weeks ago when you all decided not to do that and pulled out, it was going to cost your state $282 million to implement those tests, those assessments, because of the cost of the technology, the training for the teachers, how to give the test, setting up the huge broadband that's required for the technology and the testing and so forth. So I'm really glad that you all did what you did and took yourselves out. So that was really a good thing. Let's go on and talk a little bit now about what's happened in Texas, because, and this is a long story, Diana, how much time have we got?
Well, to tell you the truth, Ms. Donna, I set aside 2 hours. You probably can't say 2 hours, but I did that because there's also Don Wildheart from California who wants to join us in the next hour and have some questions. So you've got plenty of time.
Okay. Well, I just didn't want to bore you all or your audience, but the reason I want to bring up what happened in Texas is that this does have wide-ranging ramifications, because Common Core Standards is trying to buy a deal called C-Scope, and C-Scope is in our state. And I want to tell you how bad C-Scope is. Because if C-Scope should become a part of Common Core Standards, then states all over this country would be impacted. Now, I want to tell you the story, and I'm going to try to tell it to you just as a story. We were just so busy in Texas back in the mid-90s trying to write curriculum standards. And these standards, though, were supposedly written by the grassroots citizens of Texas, but that is absolutely bogus. They were pushed and prodded and put into place by Hillary Clinton and Mark Zucker's organization called the NCEE. And I won't go into a long story there, but just to tell you, I did serve on the writing team for English Language Arts Reading, that's ELAR, from 95 to 97, fought it all the way. We even wrote our own document. We teachers did. We current classroom teachers, first time that teachers across this country, any place, since or before or since, first time a group of current classroom teachers had ever written a standards document. And we came out with ours as an alternative. It was called the Texas Alternative Document. It was an alternative to what the state was pushing, and the state meaning that the leaders who had gone off and been trained by NCEE to be Delphi Technique trainers, and I hope you all know what Delphi Technique is. Psychological manipulation is what it is, of group experiences, so that they know how to vilify certain people in a group who are the whistleblowers who speak up to try to speak up for type 1. They are vilified and cut down, and with pyramid group manipulation, they are, you know, discredited or so forth and so on. But anyway, our document nearly passed, but it didn't quite. Well, anyway, so when that happened, then the state of Texas did go ahead and adopt the Type 2. Now, everybody knows what I'm talking about now when I say Type 1 and Type 2, so I don't have to go into a long explanation. So now we're all on the same playing field. We know what Type 1 is. We know what Type 2 is. Our document, the TAD, was Type 1, the one that was passed by the Texas State Board of Education against their will, really, was Type 2. We did not have, it was a very corrupt vote, and it was in July 1997 is when it occurred, and it had to do with politics. Our governor was running for president of the United States. That's when George W. Bush was running for president, and I think I've told you this story before, but Karl Rove was so caught up in making sure that George W. was elected that he didn't give a rip. Karl Rove didn't give a rip about what happened to our kids here in Texas in our public schools. He just wanted GWB to be elected. And so when I talked to Karl and tried to explain to him the importance of the TAD and why this was important to have Type 1 and that this was what our State Board of Education needed to pass to bless the children in our state, he could have cared less and just absolutely went out to try to destroy us is what he did. And he did. He destroyed our attempts to get it passed. And so Texas then was stuck, starting in 1997, with Type 2. Okay. Those were called the TEKS. That was the name of our standards, curriculum standards in Texas, called the TEKS. Well, based upon the TEKS then, because they were Type 2, you see, that opened the door for the textbooks then to be built upon Type 2. And we had state-mandated tests called the TAKS tax test built upon the TEKS. Boy, is that a bunch of acronymic stuff. But anyway, I hope you get that, what I'm saying. Anyway, we had bad Type 2 standards, therefore we had bad Type 2 tests, okay? And they were assessments. They were very much what we're going to see in the Common Core assessment. They're definitely Type 2. They do not have most of the tests were not, the essays were total subjectivity based upon multiculturalism and political correctness, and the scores were manipulated by the state and so on and so on. It was a mess. But anyway, during that period of time, we had the tax test then became our god in Texas because the TEKS themselves were so poorly written. They were Type 2, remember. They were so generic and hard to follow, and they weren't specific for each grade level. And, for instance, they were written in clusters, grade clusters. K1, 2, 3 were basically the same standards. So English teachers did not know what they were supposed to teach at each grade level. Grades 4 through 8 were the same. Nobody had clear goals and so forth. So what happened was, as there's always something to fill a vacuum, isn't there? And what happened is that the cottage industries just proliferated. I mean, we had people coming in here. We had teachers and administrators, and we had people from outside the state who came in to set up their tax materials, and they started selling stuff, you know, just like crazy to all the school districts. They had tax weekends where teachers would be taken at taxpayers' expense to some exotic resort, and they would be taught how to teach their kids the tax tests and all. And so the tax tests became, and they were horrible tests because they're built on terrible standards. And the tax tests really were horrible tests because the only way a student could do well on them was to play the game. So you had to learn how to teach your students the tax game. And so that became our curriculum. Well, a lot of money was going to the cottage industry. So in Texas, we have service centers. Do y'all have those in Alabama? Education centers.
Ms. Barbara?
I don't know.
I'm not aware of them.
Well, our state is so big, I don't know whether that's one reason we have them or not. But anyway, we have 20 of them. And, you know, Texas is so huge, possibly that's why we have the service centers. But they were set up by Texas to be sort of branches from the big mother agency, which is called the Texas Education Agency, which is over all the state. And so the service centers were closer, I guess, out among, you know, just kind of like branches out among, you know, the locals. And so the TEA would basically tell the ESCs, which is what they're called, education service centers, the TEA would tell the ESCs what to do, and then the ESCs would implement it with all the local school districts that were under each ESC, and there are 20 of them. Well, they got to looking at all this money that schools are spending on the cottage industry, and so they decided, okay, we need to take that money and keep it ourselves in our ESCs. We need to have a money-making thing for ourselves. So what happened is this. Now, you've got to remember the people involved here. You had Linda Darling Hammond. Linda Darling Hammond is Obama's right-hand girl. He actually wanted her to be his Secretary of Education once he was elected, Obama was elected president. He had turned to her for a while, and it looked as if she was going to be chosen instead of Arnie Duncan. Arnie, of course, came from the Chicago mafia group in which Obama was in. And so, you know, they'd been fast friends, and so I guess he turned to Arnie Duncan. But Arnie Duncan was already good friends, of course, with Bill Ayers and with Linda Darling Hammond. So once you had one, you had the whole group, okay? So Obama made a deal with Linda Darling Hammond and told her, okay, Linda, you won't be the Secretary of Education, but you can be the one to push through the Common Core standards, and you can be in charge of all of the national assessments. And if you are in charge of the national assessments, then you can be in charge of what is taught to every single public school student in the country. Because if they adopt the Common Core standards, then that means they adopt the national assessments, and the national assessments are what force teachers to teach day by day whatever is in the Common Core standards. So you have a woman in charge of those standards who is strictly tied to and is totally a minion of or a supporter of the social justice agenda, which should make everybody in this country cringe, because there are some 45 states plus D.C. who have committed to the Common Core standards. And Alabama's pulled out, and a couple of other states are in the process, has pulled out of the assessment, or they're trying to pull out. But, you know, if they don't, I mean, it's still going to be, you know, unless something happens. What's happening, one of the good things is that states are realizing the tremendous expense of the national assessments. And there is quite a group, there's quite a group coming out of the national assessments now. But anyway, you see who Linda Darling Hammond is. Well, she was one of the main people involved in creating CSCOPE. So right off, you had, you know, the footprint was right here in our own state. She came, she's, of course, very close to Bill Ayers. They're big, chummy people. Okay, so you've got this whole group, and they're in charge of CSCOPE. So they come along, and they put CSCOPE together. And, of course, it was strictly type 2. And I immediately started having teachers across the state. I've been known for some time, I guess, because I've written a zillion articles, and I've been out there. And, I taught, and even when I taught, I was out in front of some of these issues. I've always been fighting for kids and trying to do what I can to see that our schools are teaching kids what they need to know, the type 1 knowledge-based academic content. And I've just been out there a long time. I'm 72, will be pretty soon. And so, you know, I've been around a long time, and I know a lot of people. And so people know my name. And so I started having teachers all over the state who immediately, in 2005, 2006, started writing to me and saying, Donna, this is horrible stuff. We're being required to teach CSCOPE, and it is just awful. And the teachers were so upset because there is no emphasis on phonics. It is not phonics based. It is they just throw in a couple of phonics every so often to make you think so they can say it's phonics, but it's no more a phonics program than the man in the moon. And therefore, it's not a systematic approach of teaching phonics at all. It does not teach phonemic awareness in a direct systematic fashion. It does not teach a systematic presentation of grammar. And grammar and usage has to be taught in a certain order. It's like math. math and grammar and foreign languages all have to be taught by what we call a competency-based approach, where you have to learn something today before you can apply it to tomorrow. And tomorrow's lessons built upon what they've had, you know, in all the yesterdays gone by. So if you don't have that building block presentation, then students cannot possibly implement or learn thoroughly what they need to learn. So all of that was missing from the very beginning of CSCO. But anyway, meanwhile, in Texas, and I told you a while ago, in May 2008, we started writing the new ELAR Type 1 standards, curriculum standards, or TEKS, for Texas. It was a complete rewrite of all of our curriculum. We started with ELAR, which is English Language Arts Reading, the most difficult one to write because it has so many strands of curriculum in it, and it's so very important. As you know, Donnie mentioned a while ago, you know, reading is the most important thing for a child to learn in school, whether it's in homeschooling or if he's private school or public schools, whatever. That's the whole basis upon which his success in all other courses is going to depend. So we started with ELAR. And it was a long process. It took us about 2 years to write that. And I was working in the background. I say working, you understand, it's all volunteer. I never made a single penny from anything I've ever done in that area. And but anyway, it was all volunteer time. But I did assist them, just on my own initiative, with seven drafts of the ELAR. And we finally managed to get it passed and so forth. So we were busy, busy working on that, because you can't imagine the organizations throughout the United States who came down here. And, I mean, they threw everything but real grenades at our conservatives on the Texas State Board of Education. Ours in Texas, we have 15 members, and they're elected. So they represent managed to get almost enough conservatives, not quite. We didn't have quite a majority. Fortunately, we had some who joined us in passing these different Type 1 TEKS. But anyway, we had all these interest groups coming down here because our textbooks in Texas influence textbooks throughout the United States. Used to, it was California and Texas who were at the top of the market. But California's dropped out because they have no money for textbooks, new textbooks. So they're not adopting any until 2016. So Texas has completely taken over the textbook market. So what happens is that publishers try very hard to please our state board members who look at the textbooks, and who, they have to be based upon our elected state board of education members' standards, curriculum standards that were adopted. So once the standards for ELAR were adopted, that all those publishers had to make their, had to align their textbooks with our standards. And then what happens is they take those, after they sell them in Texas, then in the next years or so coming after that, they will go off to other states a little bit to make sure that they, have different things about Alabama in them or whatever. But anyway, the basic structure, the bone structure in the textbook is based upon what they adopted in Texas or what they wrote for Texas. So knowing that influence that all these national organizations, I mean, you just cannot imagine, they came out of the woodwork and bombarded and came to the public hearings and vilified and said everything they possibly could. And, of course, the news media was only too willing to publish all of that. It was heated, it was horrible, it was amazing, because in the end, we passed really good Type 1 ELAR standards. We did the same thing for science, we did the same thing for social studies, and for math. Now, this was very, very time-consuming, and our state board members are not paid a single penny. They do it completely on their own volition. They get paid nothing whatsoever. Most of them have full-time jobs. They have families that they're trying to support. And they do all this on their own because they care about our schools and our children. And so they were just putting all their time and efforts into this. Well, meanwhile, let me tell you what was going on under the radar. CSCO was just coming right straight into our schools. And we were just kind of like I said a while ago, our country couldn't handle two things at one time. We couldn't handle Obamacare and Common Core standards. Well, we're kind of like that in Texas. We were throwing all of our strength and energy to battle this thing with the new Type 1 TEKS being adopted. And frankly, nobody was paying attention to C-Scope. Well, let me tell you what C-Scope did. C-Scope, again, Type 2, strictly Type 2. They had set themselves up with the, by the service centers. And in 2009, right after we had just passed the ELAR standards in May 2008, they incorporated themselves and called themselves TESCCC. Okay? They became a corporation. So C-Scope incorporated themselves. Now, guess who incorporated themselves on the board of directors for C-Scope, or TESCCC. I'll probably just say C-Scope because it's easier to say, but you know at that point it's one and the same. Okay. Guess who's who became the members of the board of directors? 19 of the 20 EFC directors. So you had... Yeah. So you had the ESC directors at these 20 educational service centers now who marketed C-Scope.
Oh, my.
Now, talk about a conflict of interest. They were out there selling. And see, this is what happens in Texas. All of our administrators, our teachers, and so forth and so on, lean on these EFCs for all kinds of various and sundry services. And they all have these big buildings all around the state, 20 of them. And teachers go there for teacher training. They get their professional development. The administrators go there for their professional development. And see, every time you would go into their buildings, or they would also come out and be consultants in the local school districts too. And every time all these ESC employees are out there, guess what they were pushing and shoving?
Oh, wow.
Purchase C-Scope. Purchase C-Scope. Purchase C-Scope. And then when the new standards, our new standards began to be developed, then C-Scope automatically said, oh, we'll take care of you locals. We'll make sure your teachers teach the new standards. Because we have exactly what they need. We are a curriculum management system. That's what they call themselves. And they promised these administrators, they said, because these new Type 1 standards, remember, are more rigorous than the Type 2. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You go back to really having to do correct grammar, and you have to learn cursive writing, and you have to spell correctly, and you have to learn your math facts, and you can't just have rainforest algebra where you just kind of guess on what the answer possibly could be. You have real answers. You have to study real history. You study real heroes, real heroines. You study American exceptionalism. You actually read the primary documents of our country. That's a whole lot harder than Type 2. So, yeah, it was those standards are more rigorous. And so those administrators were scared to death, because they did not want to lose their standings, their ratings that are handed out based upon how the kids do on their start their tests, which now the new tests in Texas are called STAR tests, and in high school they're called end of course tests.
Mm-hmm.
So we call them STAR/EOCs. So anyway, those tests are Type 1. They actually are Type 1 tests, and they're built upon the Type 1 standards. So that means that they have right or wrong answers, and they're fact-based, and they do combine, you know, lots of critical thinking, and students do have to stretch to do well on the STAR test, which is a good thing. That's what we want kids to do, and when they haven't been learning those skills, they've got to go back and learn them, you see. So anyway, C-Scope came out with a false advertising, and they came out saying, we'll solve your problems. Well, they not only did that, but this is what's really bad. By the way, Diana and Barbara, do you want to say something?
Oh, no, Ms. Barbara. Well, I don't know about Ms. Barbara, but I'm just, Ms. Donna, you're just telling us, you really step by step what we need to know, so I'm just waiting. I can probably get it. I don't hear Ms. Barbara, but she's probably just muted herself and is listening, and I haven't done that. But, yeah, we're so interested. Go ahead, Ms. Donna.
Well, anyway, what happened was this, and this is so bad. School districts who purchase C-Scope, and it's expensive, and you have to buy it every year. It's like renting a system. And at first, C-Scope kept saying, we're not a curriculum, because, see, it's illegal for curriculum to come out, to be sold like that at taxpayers' expense, and for it to come out through a government agency, which is what ESCs are, just as it is illegal for the federal government to tell schools what curriculum to use. There are three different laws right now that the Common Core is breaking. Well, it's the same thing at the state level. You know, the state level has no right to tell the locals what curriculum to use, yet you have the ESCs, who are basically the same thing as C-Scope, telling schools, you know, what to use in their classrooms. That's illegal. So the way they got around it was they said, oh, we're not selling curriculum. Or a curriculum management system. But the catch was that they said because we are copyrighted, nobody is allowed to see C-Scope.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was this. About a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, there was a lady named Janice Van Cleve, who had been a science teacher for many, many years. She was retired. She has wonderful, I think she's had 53 books published on science. She's studied all over the world. She's gone to Alaska, and she's gone to the Arctic and the Antarctic. I mean, she's just been all over it. She's just done all these experimental things with NASA, and she's really a neat science teacher, and she has great ideas, and people who, science teachers have used her materials all over, and they're you know, I don't know how many languages they've been published in, but a whole bunch. She's really a science expert. Well, she was living in a small town here in Texas, not too far from Waco, and we live outside of Waco, and she had gone to a neighboring school district that had just, I think that had 3 years of being called unacceptable, which means that they had really terrible, you know, scores on their tests and just a miserable little school district. And so there had been a faith-based organization over there who was offering tutoring for these children, many of them at-risk students. And so the little children would come over there after school, and this faith-based group would have tutors come in and work with the kids, all voluntary. So Janice went over there, and she was going to help these kids with science, and she was going to make it fun for them, and she knew that was some area that she could help them in. She was retired. She just wanted to help these kids. And they came in, and she said, well, let me see what you're studying. Let me see your textbooks. Oh, Miss Janice, we don't have any textbooks. Well, let me see your worksheets then. Oh, we don't have any worksheets. We do everything at school. So she thought, okay, well, I can't help them on anything if I don't know what they're supposed to be studying. So she went over to the school and she talked to the principal. He said, we're a C-Scope district, and we cannot let you or anybody see the material, because we have signed, and all of us, the teachers and everyone, had to sign a gag order. And in the gag order, it actually said that you could face litigation if you allowed anybody to see the materials. So Janice thought, and he said, you're going to have to go to the ESC. So she came over here to Waco and went to ESC 12, and she went in there and she said, I would like to see the material so that I can help these kids. And she was told, no, you cannot see this. You're a vendor. You're a science vendor. We can't let you see them. You can copy them. And she said, wait a minute. She said, textbooks? She said, I know not to copy anything out of a textbook. She said, I know about plagiarism. She said, I'm not going to copy anything. She said, you know, you can't copy my stuff either. She said, I've copyrighted my materials. But she said, that doesn't mean we can't see each other's stuff. We need to be able to see so we can teach the concepts. And she said, I need to know what they're studying, fourth grade, fifth grade, whatever grade it was. I need to know what they're studying so I'll know what to teach these kids.
Yeah.
And she was told, you can't see. And everything is digitized. And you have to have a password to get in to see the materials. So she contacted the Texas Education Agency, the Commissioner of Education. Even had his office send a letter, an email, to the ESC outside of Waco, in Waco, rather, telling them that they needed to give this woman access, they refused.
Oh.
Now, that's about the time that I really got involved in this thing, because I was watching this from afar. I was working just day and night on Common Core Standards, Dana. You and Barbara know how much I've written on that subject, and I also cover political and social issues, too. So I cover education, political, and social, all three, and there's just a lot going on in our country, obviously, with all the elections and, you know, everything we've had going. Well, I just felt I couldn't take up another subject. But by this time, Janice had contacted me probably about the time she started on this adventure of her own and wanted some help. And I said, Janice, you go ahead and take it. You're doing a great job. You go ahead and take Cisco. But I could tell that she was sinking. I mean, she was really getting frustrated, and I knew I needed to just assist her. And so I came on in then and really researched it thoroughly myself, wrote some pieces on this, and we began to break this thing open. And Janice has a wonderful daughter named Jenny Russell who helped her also, and they managed. We got the word out enough to across the state to where teachers who were highly frustrated, I mean, they are just, if you were to see this C-scope material, and we finally did get to see it, a lot of it, and I'll tell you just a minute how come we did. But if you were to see it, you would see why these teachers have been agonizing. It is the biggest mishmash of junk you have ever seen in your life. It is hard to read. It's all digitized. The lines are right close together. They're not formatted where you can read them easily. They have all kinds of poorly written sentences, all kinds of errors in the keys. And by the time we got into it, it is curriculum. And I'll tell you about that in just a second. Let me come back to that. But anyway, back to the story. So what happened was we were getting the word around about this, and teachers began to write us anonymously. And they began to give us, we even got access to a password. And we were able to get in and see the materials. And Ginger, Janice, and all different people, John Griffin writes for WorldNet Daily. John is a wonderful young man, a really good investigative reporter. He got involved. The Daily Caller, Glenn Beck, a lady named Ann Work, who is a reporter at Wichita Falls, Texas. And there's an ESC right outside of Wichita Falls, and she got involved doing some great reporting. Kim Brown, all kinds of people from all over the country started reporting. Texas Eagle Forum did a great job, had a two-part series on it. We just started getting a whole lot of publicity. Well, when that started happening, and teachers started getting word, because they were just dying. I mean, they were so frustrated with it. What they were finding, and anyway, they started sending us their passwords, and we started getting the material. And once we started seeing it, I'm telling you, folks, it is the awfulest stuff you've ever seen. And if anybody wants to do a Google search, all you have to do is put in C-scope. And you will find a slew of articles that have been written about it. And, I mean, they have, John Griffin now has, you know, documented such, you know, he even documented, he just put out an article last night. Did you get that one, Diana? About the burkas?
I did. That was horrible. I mean, that's part of their whole art was dressed up. Oh, my goodness.
Right. Yes, they in a school called Lumberton ISD, which is here in Texas, a teacher using C-scope because the thing with C-scope that was so frustrating is not only did you have to sign this gag order that made you libelous if you ever revealed what was in C-scope to parents or to anybody else, then you also had to follow exactly step by step. if it told you that you had to be on this particular lesson, and it is curriculum. Let me explain that. We finally were able to prove that because we were able to get a contract that CSCO signed with Harris County Department of Education, that Harris County Houston. And in the contract, 2 years running, it brags about the fact that CSCO is the best curriculum you can get. And so it says it right there. So we knew it was curriculum. So anyway, and of course it was curriculum. When we went into it, you could see the lessons. I mean, the lessons are right there. It tells teachers exactly, you know, how to teach it, what to teach, and it is total indoctrination. I'm telling you, it's the worst junk I've ever seen. In the area of English, they rely heavily on Lucy Calkins. Well, Lucy Calkins is your big whole language, balanced literacy, you know, write the way you feel. I mean, that whole genre, that whole philosophy of education is type two. It's exactly what, and see, by law, CSCOPE and anything else that is sold using in Texas, using our taxpayers' money, is to align with our TEKS. And see, it is type two. CSCOPE is type two. Our TEKS are type one. It is not in alignment. It is definitely not in alignment. And we keep the box and sitting the ground. Go ahead.
And the Linda Darling Helen connection. To me, that's
I know. I know. I mean, and Bill Ayers and Lucy Calkins and guided reading. Guided reading is the worst thing you could have to teach kids phonics because it teaches them to guess. It is totally the bogus way. It is the same thing as whole language. All of that has been totally discredited by the National Institutes of Health reading research. That whole approach is completely bogus, and that is one reason we have so many people in America who cannot read well enough, because they were taught whole language. We know it doesn't work. And so here we have right under our noses, and CSCOPE, I didn't mention to you, CSCOPE is being used in from 70 to 80% of our public schools in Texas.
And now, you know, we have there that that this is going to be coming, unfortunately, the way of everybody else is on Common Core standards. So I hope that everybody heard that. What you just said, really, everybody needs to hear, just like you said, Ms. Donna, so we can follow in detail the story. But I've got Ms. Dawn Wildman here with us.
I can't. I've got to keep going with this because you've got to hear some more that happened. Well, the wonderful thing is that we finally were able to mount, and this is why I want you all to know this, because grassroots people have power, Diana. Working together, they can achieve great things. Do you know that we finally got the attention of our Texas senators, and the Texas Senator Dan Patrick, who is in charge of the Senate Education Committee, had a public hearing on CSCOPE, and then he was interviewed on Fox News afterwards. And I mean, this is just all over the country now, what has come. And finally, because of all the pressure, then TEFCCC CSCOPE has had to agree that they will open up their curriculum so that everybody can see it, because we also have a law in Texas that says parents 24 hours a day, 24/7, have the right to see any curriculum that is presented to their children. So we were able to bring all of that out, and now CSCOPE is in a world of hurt, and they are running for their lives, because now, as more and more comes out, and more of this material is revealed, it's, you know, the Burka thing, the deal with the Boston Tea Party, where CSCOPE teaches the Boston Tea Party that the Boston Tea Party participants were terrorists. It actually says that in the curriculum. It's teaching our children that those people that participated in that Boston Tea Party, those wonderful patriots, that they were terrorists, and it names them terrorists. I mean, it talks about Allah being the Almighty God. It teaches the five pillars. It teaches pro-Islam, anti-Christian, anti-Judeo material. I mean, it's just all of that is coming out. But anyway, the good news is that grassroots people did have an effect, and we're not there yet. We want to take C-SCOPE completely down. We don't want to take one penny of our dollars, of our tax dollars, and we're not going to quit until we destroy it. We are trying to destroy the name brand and everything about it because it is a miserable indoctrination of our children. But anyway, we're making. Okay, I'm through.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. When I was following that, and Alison had came on, I found myself, there's nobody there that is fit to stay in their position because their mindset is so wrong that there's no good that's going to come out of this if those people are allowed to stay. Because to me, you know, for you, your foundation's got to be right. And their thinking is so warped, and they don't mind warping the minds of all those children and also putting a gag on those teachers. You know, it's, to me, I'm so shocked that this is the danger of digitized learning because those teachers were put to the fear of losing their jobs. And this is what can happen anywhere.
Not just losing their jobs. They could have been sued. According to this contract, they could be sued for revealing what was in C-SCOPE. I mean, they put the fear of God in civil hearts. Now, why do those poor teachers have been so frustrated? Anyway.
Well, let me ask you about our problem here in Alabama. I think Ms. Donna, Ms. Barber's not able to stay, but Don Wadman's here with us, too. But let me ask you, if I may, some of the things that our legislators are throwing out at us so that you can help us, you know, give them something that hopefully will open their eyes. Some of them are being told that they've got to stick with Common Core. They need it because of the No Child Left Behind. And also some are being told, look, we've already spent so much on Common Core, we can't get out of it. We've invested so much. Would you reply to just those two things?
Well, it has to do with type 1 and type 2. You know, you want to indoctrinate your children into type 2, or do you want to go ahead and teach them how to be successful human beings who can think for themselves, can read, can write well, can actually be wonderful patriots for our country? I mean, it comes down to that. And if they think that, you know, bringing in the Common Core is strictly type 2. I mean, it is strictly type 2. And I mean, it is, you know, it's just like C-SCOPE. You know, they're teaching, it's going to be a pro-Muslim, it's going to be anti-Christian, it's going to be everything they can do to destroy America, the idea of American exceptionalism. It is not going to have people, you know, kids reading the classics. That's one of the main things that has come out about the Common Core. They're going to make it where teachers have a certain percentage of the time that they have to teach informational text. And some of these informational text pieces have already begun to surface. And they're teaching things that are, you know, that are totally multiculturalism, politically correct junk. And instead of teaching kids the rich, wonderful classics, we had our grandchildren with us this weekend. And one of them is in second grade, and the other is in eighth grade. So a big range. We went through Great Expectations. I had taught that for so many years when I taught English. It's a wonderful, wonderful novel by Charles Dickens, and it teaches so much. It is just as rich and just as great and teaches real truths today the same way that it taught, you know, has taught children for eons, because it teaches, you know, the truth. The idea that there is a right and a wrong. There is, you know, we need to appreciate those who love us and who are our parents and are the ones that we look to as mentors and advisors. And we need to treat them with dignity and not ever put material things above our love and respect for those who teach us those core values. And all of that is taught in Great Expectations. Our grandchildren, we had the video of it that I had used. It's an old, old video because it goes back. It's very close to the original book itself. And our grandchildren, were fascinated. We watched that thing, and we stopped it and talked about the lessons being taught. Our little second grader could follow it absolutely to the core. And that's because that's great piece of literature taught that way. It will not be taught anymore in any school that's Common Core standards. They will not be teaching those great pieces of literature because they have to teach I think it's 70% in the high school, I have to teach the informational text. And so they only leave a very small time period in each class, English class, for them to teach the classics. So they won't be teaching the great pieces of literature that have connected, you know, our generation upon generation in our country. That's a horrible loss, Diana. Horrible.
LaDonna, I think they're going to be turned into promoters of this climate agenda, everything that the president wants. You know, pretty much have to build on down the line. And the Democrats, it's really, I'm sure they're loving this because this is really just breeding more liberals. But let me ask you again about the No Child Left Behind in labor, because that's something that was asked, is that, you know, well, you know, all these, you know, we're in trouble. You know, we've got to have a waiver. And I was told the waiver, really, it's not going to last for a year. But now what is the pain, what's the most painful thing that could happen to them if the case is, you know, they get out of Common Core and this waiver is not what they're going to get?
Well, okay. No Child Left Behind is built upon the idea that there will be improvement from year to year among children and demographic areas, you know, the demographic groups and so forth and so on. Well, what have you got to lose? I mean, what are we building our education on? What are we building success on? The ability to read. Common Core is not going to teach children to read. So, therefore, and Common Core, let me go through some things with you on that, Diana, and for your audience. Common Core was written, the English standards were written basically by David Coleman, who is not even an English teacher at all, and he wrote this. He now is head of the college board. He's already said he's going to change the SAT tests and the advanced placement tests. He's going to move them over to the Common Core. So that's going to be dangerous. I mean, that's terrible. And he's the kind of person now who put together the Common Core standards, and he's never taught a day in his life in the elementary classroom. And he's decided what's going to be taught to these little children about reading. Well, of course, it's not going to teach reading. It's going to, they don't even talk about, they think it's wrong to try to tell teachers, you know, that a child needs to learn his phonemes and so forth. I mean, that's not going to be presented in a systematic fashion at all. Okay, so that means that kids who are going to study under Common Core are going to be dumbed down. We know that. They're not going to be able to read well, period. They're not going to have any systematic instruction of grammar. They're not distinct goals set at each grade level for grammar and usage. They do not teach cursive writing at all. Children in the Common Core standards states will not be learning cursive writing. If they cannot read cursive writing, then they cannot read the primary documents of our country. They cannot go into a museum and read a diary or a chronicle or anything. So that means they will be captive to the revisionist history that is presented to them because they will not be able to go back and read the original pieces, the original documents. We cannot let that happen. Alabama cannot let that happen to your children. And so it's just for those reasons.
That's a fair fact, Ms. Donna. I mean, I may sound dumb, but to me, okay, you're trying to get out of No Child Left Behind, but you want to get under this waiver, which means to use Common Core, but as you're just saying, it's really going to dumb down kids. So why not just improve it and copy what Texas has done, you know, with what you're talking about?
Of course, Diana, and if you don't want to go with the Texas standards, which are free for the taking, if you don't want to do that, Dr. Sandra Stotsky, who is a foremost expert in English language arts reading and also in math, who has helped states all over this country, including Texas, to write excellent ELAR standards. 2 weeks ago, she came out with a document that she's giving away free to states and local school districts, anybody who wants it. She put it out on WordPress. Anyone can print it off and use those standards. It is the most wonderful gift that could be given. And, you know, Texas's standards, she helped us to write ours. And she is wonderful. And her document, it was a love gift that she gave to the world. I mean, she gave that. And it is an excellent document. I've been through it. It is excellent. Just as our standards in Texas are excellent. And these are free states. Don't even have to go through the whole process themselves. You know, that can be somewhat expensive to write those. They've got these free documents. Take them.
So it sounds like they've been given a rally cry, which is really a scare tactic, is what it sounds like to me, which is kind of stupid. I hate to say it. But because, as you're saying, there's options already out there. But now let me ask this, because I know that homeschool is very interested, and Don, I'm going to turn it over to you. But homeschoolers are questioning, how is it going to affect them? Why should this matter? Could you tell the homeschoolers how this matters to them and the private schoolers and Christian schoolers?
Well, are the homeschoolers going to take the SAT test?
Yes.
And who's going to be rewriting the SAT test? David Coleman, who's now the head of the College Board. And who is David Coleman? He wrote the Common Core Standards for English. I mean, yes, homeschoolers are going to be affected. Yes, they need to be involved. Yes, they need to be fighting this stuff just as hard and fast as they can. The saving grace for all of us is probably the fact that these stupid national assessments are going to be terribly expensive. And that is the one good thing about having a downturn of our economy, is the fact that when states really, and a lot of states are already looking at this, and they are saying, we can't do this. We can't afford the national assessments. We can't afford. And see, it isn't just the national assessments. If you go with Common Core Standards, those are all digitized. Those standards are delivered on, you know, they're delivered in a digitized fashion on computers. So students will have to have their own iPads. I mean, there won't be any choice. Every kid's going to have his own iPad. Because they have to do benchmark testing. They have to take these things periodically. They are multimedia type, project-based learning things. They'll be taking them with partners. They'll be working. I mean, they're going to be using it. They're going to have everybody's going to have his own iPad or his own, technology device of some sort. He can't go to the computer lab and do it. He's got to have it 24 hours a day. So, you know, that's another reason why this whole thing is so expensive. And this is why Microsoft and the technology industry has gotten so far behind this. And, of course, Bill Gates has paid for the whole thing to be, you know, he's pushed and shoved and forced it into, push this whole thing along. Because Microsoft is going to have the database. Remember, the national database will be Microsoft, I guarantee you. That's the big thing.
He's done it before, right, Ms. Donna? He doesn't mind doing it. He's done it before. He's gotten away with it. He's at it again. It's about money, and I'm hoping parents are listening. And I just think about the cost of, you know, Obama's race to the top challenge, $1.35 billion. But Alabama, it's going to come for $281 million, and we never got a penny. And for these people in the education system that say, we've already invested a lot of money. I mean, now the roses. It's really taxpayers' money, and our children are not for sale. I like that, you know, you posted that, children for sale. They're not for sale. And what makes me so mad is, it's like the abortion issue. It's okay to kill a child away. It's okay to take away a parent's input when? So it's never okay.
Folks, thank you for listening. This is really a great podcast. Please share it. We in Alabama are in the fight of our life. The bill, Senate Bill 190, needs to be gotten out of committee so that it can be voted in full by the Senate. That is our first step. And there is supposed to be, it's supposed to be on a committee meeting schedule. They put it off last Wednesday. So it's supposed to be on this Wednesday, the 13th. We're praying that those who hear this will take it to their legislators and say, we need to get Senate Bill 190 out of committee. Start here in Alabama. And if you're in another state, please get more of this information. Go to truthinamericaneducation.com. We've got all sorts of podcasts here. We have a Mr. Henry Burke who would be glad to find the cost for your state if you don't know it, want to be involved. We know that the Republican women have put that in their national resolution for the National Federation of Republican Women to get out of Common Core Standards. Our LO is seen here in Alabama. It's a leader of that. So contact your Republican women's group because, you know, they are already behind this issue in your state. Get your state out of it. Get informed, share this podcast, download it, make CDs of it, and share it with your churches. You know, we're going to have also a flyer for you to share. So tell them to go to www.cityonahill.tv, and it'll be on the front of the website, steps you can take to inform. May God bless you. May God shine his face upon you. We're so grateful for the state of Georgia, and we're going to be so grateful for our state legislators who help us in the fight to regain our parental rights. Thank you and goodbye.